This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood to sing the blues or engage in a timeless stage drama, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Big Easy Entertainment award-winning singer and performer Dorian Rush is back, and this time she's got the blues. A brand new cabaret show she calls 100 Years of Women in Blues. Dorian Rush is here. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Diane. Thank you so much for having me today.
This is an ambitious journey as you take us through the roots of blues beginning a century ago. How did the idea for this show come about?
Well, it actually started when I wrote my Livin' Janis production. The Janis Joplin show that I did, because I started to research the music that inspired her. And that was back in 2009. I had been exposed to the blues prior to that, but I hadn't really been exposed to the magnificent collection and richness of the catalog of women in blues. And so Janis Joplin had a lot of admiration for Big Mama Thornton and Bessie Smith and artists like this. So I started to delve into that at that time, and it created an interest for me that was very deep, and it resonated very deeply with me.
You say it resonated very deeply with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you connect with the music.
I didn't start singing until I was about 28, 29 years old. I never felt that I had the right to sing the blues when I was younger. And it wasn't until life knocked me down a little bit, especially after Katrina hit, and I started fully understanding what true deep loss was, I finally decided that I had always been encouraged to sing the blues, but I never felt I had a right to. And finally, one day, I felt like I had earned the right. And I started to sing the blues, and it was cathartic because it was so raw and pure and from such an emotional place that it felt like a form of prayer for me. And it cleansed me. I was able to take all the frustration and anger and sadness and love and joy, everything that life is, and let it out. It was very impactful. And I knew that the blues were something that everybody can relate to because it is literally, quintessentially, the human experience.
Tell me about this journey. How does it unfold? What will audiences experience?
The most beautiful thing about women in blues is not just their music. It is the attitude that they embody. They really were the original feminists. They brought a voice to something that was not talked about. They sang about things that were taboo in the society. They bucked up against gender specifics. They said, hey, you know, life is unfair, and these rules are unfair, and I don't want to play by them, and I'm not going to play by them. A blues woman is sexy, she's bold, she is spiritual, she is emotional, she is completely unapologetic about who she is, about her desires and her demands. And she demands fairness. It's the music of a revolution. In the 1920s, it was the sexual revolution. In the 1960s, it was the civil rights movement, women's equal rights, and the second sexual revolution that happened. And we're right on track for another one. The younger generations need to know the stories of these women, and they were so rarely written down. The only way to tell these stories was through music.
Who are some of your favorite artists?
The greats are unmistakable. Bessie Smith. I have personal favorites, and they're not necessarily categorized as blues singers, but blues is certainly the basis of their music. Aretha Franklin. But then we have wonderful local musicians, Marva Wright, Irma Thomas, Marcia Ball. There's so many people. Billie Holiday, even though she was technically a jazz singer, so much of her music was blues. It was based in the blues. And then more modern, Bonnie Raitt, Susan Tedeschi. You know, you can start going on, but you can see the influence. Blues is the mother language of American music. And that's where the show will sort of take you on a ride with. It shows you the basics, because not all blues is 12-bar blues. But you can hear the influence of it in all these different types of music. So I'm trying to showcase that as well.
And you're also telling the stories of the women.
You know, when you go on the internet and you do a search, greatest blues performers, you get Muddy Waters, B.B. King. You get all these male artists, and almost never do these female artists come up, even though it was women that completely dominated the blues recording scene when it first came out. There were no male blues recording artists. And they pretty much dominated the scene from 1920, where that was the very first recording was done by Mamie Smith, called Crazy Blues in 1920. And Blind Lemon Jefferson, I believe he recorded a song in 1925, but it really didn't become popular for male blues artists to do their thing until after the stock market crash. So for that first decade, women ruled it.
Tell us, how do you get into character?
It's interesting. With this show in particular, I'm not so much embodying the character of the woman, more the spirit of the woman. I'm telling more the obstacles that they faced and how they overcame them with their art. And not necessarily overcame them, just admitted them, honestly. It's paying homage to the spirit of the blues woman. And so each and every one of these women are unique and have such a unique story. I can't go into extreme detail because I have so much music to cover.
What are some of your favorite songs?
Oh, man, they're all so wonderful. Honestly, one of my favorite is The Dirty Dozens. That song was written in the early 20s, but it was made popular by the movie The Color Purple. It's two voices singing, and it's them basically one-upping each other, and it's sort of like, your mama. It's one of those things. Going back and forth, it's lively and it's funny. That's the thing about the blues. A lot of it is funny. I love the tempo of it. I love the insults traded with it. But then I also love how deep and sorrowful some of them get. Etta James, I Would Rather Go Blind, is absolutely one of my favorite songs of all time.
Something told me it was over.
The first time I heard that song, even though I had never experienced something like that at the time that I heard it, I was brought to tears. Beautiful thing about the blues, as Etta James described it, when she wrote that song, it meant one thing. As she kept singing it throughout the years, it took on a different meaning in her life, depending on where she was emotionally at the moment. It eventually turned into, I would rather go blind than see my own faults, as opposed to losing a love affair. You know, I would rather stay blind and stay ignorant, because when I open my eyes and see the truth, it is just too painful.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
Big Mama Thornton. The song Hound Dog was written for her by two teenagers. She was a big, tall woman with scars all over her face. She's considered what they describe as a bear woman back then. She was gruff and not easily walked on. And when you hear Hound Dog with the original lyrics and her original groove behind it, you suddenly realize this song is absolutely written for a woman to sing. The term hound was actually a euphemism for a gigolo at the time. And you add that with a dog, a gigolo dog. In the lyrics, she talks about, you ain't nothing but a hound dog. Quit snooping around my door. You keep wagging your tail, but I ain't gonna feed you no more. So it's about a man who's using a woman to just have an easy life. And he's not looking for love, and he's not looking for a woman. He's simply looking to be taken care of.
And who will you be accompanied by?
Ainsley Maddock will be on piano. It's just piano and vocals. She is a very talented artist in town. I really was specific with my producer that I had to have a female artist backing me up on stage, simply for the spirit of the show. And so many blues women played their instruments magnificently. Sister Rosetta Tharpe, she was a master of instruments. She played piano, she played steel guitar. Sister Rosetta Tharpe was the inspiration behind Elvis Presley and Chuck Berry. Her guitar style was directly ripped off and copied by them. People don't know it, but she made rock and roll what it is today. That sound, that authentic original sound, came directly from her.
Will audiences be uplifted by this experience?
I feel like people coming into this show will leave feeling like their soul's been scrubbed and shined up. It's going to show you a little bit of everybody's story that make up this whole thing that we call life. You get all the feels. It's going to be funny. It's going to be sad. It's going to be happy. It's going to be dirty because, well, blues is famous for its double entendres and euphemisms. It's going to be everything.
Acclaimed singer and performer Dorian Rush, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you so much, Diane.
Save the Date, JPAS and Jonathan Merez Productions present 100 Years of Women in Blues, starring Dorian Rush at Teatro Wego, 177 Sala Avenue in West Wego. Performances begin August 9th and will run through August 25th. More info is online at jpas.org. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. To be or not to be, that is the question. Yes, the Prince of Denmark, Hamlet, is up and running, rounding out the 26th season of the New Orleans Shakespeare Festival at Tulane. And joining us to unpack the themes in one of the Bard's most popular tragedies are actors Patrick Bowen and Casey Groves. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you. Well,
thank you for having us.
This is a big work with lots of plot twists and turns, and it's oh so deadly. How are you adapting this classic work that's some 400 years old for contemporary audiences?
This is Patrick. Shakespeare's work is incredibly timeless, and you can set it in contemporary times, you can set it in the future, and you'll find the words still ring very true.
And where is it being set?
Modern-day Denmark, essentially.
It's very contemporary. The king is more like a CEO, you know. Definitely contemporary clothes and kind of hipster clothing.
Oh, absolutely. And the younger actors, you know, are largely based on, you know, college students of today, the music that they would listen to, the clothes they would wear.
2019?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Only thing would be no cell phones on stage,
right?
I suppose. Yeah. Other than that.
So let's set the stage. Patrick, you play Hamlet, and Casey, you're Claudius. What's their relation, and how does this story unfold?
This is Casey. As you can imagine, there is some tension between the two of them, especially since his own father just died. Claudius is very snaky, but he's also very charming. So he has this ability to kind of put on a nice show about everything and, you know, project charm. And so you don't quite know why Hamlet's being such a But he's just kind of annoyed and sullen and moody, you know, he's like a goth boy, you know. And then as time goes on, you start to realize that, you know, something is rotten in the state of Denmark.
At one point, Hamlet likely had a lot of love for Claudius, I think, as an uncle, you know, which only makes the betrayal so much more intense when he marries his mother. And then he finds out that, of course, it was Claudius himself who murdered his father, at which point I would imagine all the love in the relationship goes out and it becomes quite a toxic relationship and a back and forth one in which Claudius is trying to wrangle Hamlet in and Hamlet is trying to poke and prod at Claudius at any way that he can. And being the head of state, there's really nobody that can step in and sort of stop the madness, and that's why it all ends in tragedy, as we know.
And he not only killed your father, but he took over the role that would rightfully have been yours.
True.
Hamlet.
Very true.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately true. And in fact, I think you even have a line in the beginning about that.
Right. You are the most immediate to our throne.
Right, exactly.
And with no less nobility of love than that which dearest father bears his son, do I impart toward you.
If only I could believe that.
It sounds so nice.
Indeed it does. It sounds lovely, but I think that at that time even Hamlet, you know, he's in school. He's going to school in Wittenberg, Germany. and even beyond, you know, if his father had not passed away, you know, I think that would have been something that wasn't, you know, firmly on his mind. And surely now, after the death of his father, I can imagine him being sort of taken aback at even the thought that he would be thinking about ascending to the throne or anything like that. Whereas you, Claudius, that is, so naturally gravitate towards that political, that charm-inducing, you know, lifestyle, mm-hmm. sort of sleazy lifestyle, right. as it were. You know,
yeah, one of my costumes I'm so excited about is this very, it's a shark. It's a, you know, it's this gray shark-colored suit, so sharp, and I feel like I could just like rub my arm down my sleeve and I just slip off. It's so sleazy.
Just wring you out.
Yeah. But I mean, the other thing, the interesting thing I think about our relationship is that I do feel like they match each other in ways in terms of intellect and strategy.
Sure.
You know, like when Claudius tries to get you killed in this secretive way, then Hamlet turns that on its head. So I feel like they kind of match each other in their ability to outthink each other, mm-hmm. which I think is really great on Shakespeare's part. You know, Claudius has this one long speech where he reveals his crime. And I think that, in a way, changes his levels. He's no longer like this, you know, two-dimensional villain. He becomes a person who can really self-reflect, which is kind of Hamlet's hallmark. And so I feel like in some ways, in that one speech, he matches Hamlet's humanity. And so I feel like they are very well matched as rivals, you know, arch nemesis.
True. No, I would agree with that. And in that particular scene as well, it's rather tragic that you begin to show your humanity, as it were. But in that same very scene where you've said all these poignant things, you know, my character, Hamlet, all he can think about is revenge, you know, revenge.
Revenge is a big theme. What else is being explored?
I think anger, and perhaps not forgiveness, but the ability to let things go. One thing we were talking about in the rehearsal process was that, so Hamlet is set forth on his journey by the ghost of his father, as I think many people know. And it's a very interesting thing that his father, you know, sends him basically on a path that he knows will result in the death of his own son in a quest for vengeance. Obviously, misjustice has been taken against him. But rather than tell his son to leave, to run away, get away from these corrupt people, go back to Germany, go to England, go anywhere else, you know, but here with these people, you know, he plunges him further into the mire and all of that. It starts to seep more into Hamlet's psyche as the play goes on. It's just a message that, you know, anger and violence is very cyclical, and it's a poison. You know, it seeps in like a disease. Perhaps Hamlet could forgive Claudius, but at the very least he could, you know, live a happy life, and that could be its own revenge. But instead, he's still spurred on by his own father to continue this sort of very dangerous track to achieve revenge. And to me, that's incredibly tragic as well. You know, it's the line, something is rotten in the state of Denmark. I mean, it permeates to every corner of the kingdom, and I think it's shown throughout the entire play.
Is there something that you can share, a scene from the performance that shows us your character?
Well, we do have that confrontation.
For England?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Essentially, in this scene, at a certain critical moment, Hamlet has gone past the point of no return, as it were, in Denmark. He has made some choices and poked and prodded at his uncle and his mother, and he has become violent in a way that can no longer be pushed under the rug.
Hamlet has killed Claudius's chief advisor, Polonius. So as soon as I find this out, I go track him down, and he starts mouthing off all this witty gibberish that doesn't make any real sense.
King Claudius has decided that Hamlet must be bound for England. And this is a little brief interlude right before he is sent away.
Now, Hamlet, where is Polonius?
At supper.
At supper, where?
Not where he eats, but where he is eaten. A certain convocation of politic worms are eaten at him.
Where is Polonius?
In heaven. Send thither to see. If your messenger find him not there, seek him in the other place yourself. But indeed, if you find him not within the month, you will nose him as you go up the stairs into the lobby.
Go seek him there.
He will stay till ye come.
Hamlet, this deed of thine must send thee hence with fiery quickness. Therefore prepare thyself. Everything is bent for England.
For England?
Aye, Hamlet.
Good.
So is it, if thou knewest our purposes.
Farewell, dear mother.
Thy loving father, Hamlet.
My mother. Father and mother is man and wife. Man and wife is one flesh. So again, my mother. Come for England.
What are you hoping audiences will leave the theater thinking about long after the curtain falls?
Hopefully that we can just impress upon people that even though these plays are 400 years old, they're truer now than they were in Shakespeare's day. And you can find examples of that in any one of his texts, but certainly in Hamlet. Just the various statements, not only that are made about human nature, but about the nature of politics and the nature of running a nation. Obviously, these are things everybody in America is thinking about now. I think we have a few things in this production planned that are a little outside of the box and maybe might get a little more of an electric reaction.
Mm-hmm. I think if we can just deliver the play to a modern audience and make it understandable so that people can get the soul of what's trying to be conveyed by Shakespeare, I think that would be enough, more than enough, you know?
Actors Patrick Bowen and Casey Groves, thanks.
Thank you.
Hamlet continues its run at the New Orleans Shakespeare Festival with performances through July 28th in the Lupin Theater at Tulane University. More info is online at neworleansshakespeare.org. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45, when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.